You're about to hear an inspiring message from the team at C3 Church Bathurst. It's our prayer that it will spur you to live your best life in Him.
So good to be here in our third week on, can't believe how quick this has gone, on our Ancient Wisdom for Modern World. Wow, this month is zooming through. Just one more next week. Pastor Brian from Tamworth will be here. If you haven't met Brian, he's the... He's a Tamworth pastor. He's a former Rodeo rider, and he loves watching Rodeo videos. Last time I was at his house, he said, "God, look at this, Jeff. Sit down and watching this crazy." You know, if they have to stay on for 8 seconds. That's all. Have you ever seen they're bulls, aren't they? And you got to just stay on for 8 seconds. How hard can that be? So this guy's done it. That's why he's short. He's done. No, not every person who's short has been a Rodeo rider. It's just that, anyway, I'm going to back out. He's got a great story. He's going to encourage the men a lot in winning in life. That's his topic. And he's got a huge heart for people. So you're a very genuine guy. I love Pastor Brian. Hey, let's find Psalm. We're going to look at Psalm 19 and then launch into Proverbs. I just love Psalm 19 because as we're exploring the wisdom of God, I see it right throughout scriptures. And this captures it so well in Psalm 19, verse 7. I'll just read it out to you. It says, "The law of the Lord is perfect, reviving the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The precepts of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The rules of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. More to be desired are they than gold, even much fine gold, sweeter than honey and the drippings of honeycomb. Moreover, by them is your servant warned. In keeping them, there is great reward. Who can discern his errors? Declare me innocent from hidden faults. Keep back your servant also from presumptuous sins. Let them not have dominion over me, then I shall be blameless." There's this sense that we're all fallen. We're all a bit broken. We're all a bit bent out of shape. And if you're not, you're not human. And somehow God's ways work. They work in getting us back together. They work in showing us our true north. They work in showing us how life works or should work. And the more, I just love this Bible. The more I read it, the more I agree with it. The more I agree with it, the more it changes my life. It challenges my world. And my life changes from strength to strength. There is such blessing and such wisdom. And the book of Proverbs is such a book. It's a wisdom book. It's packed with wisdom. And the wisdom is observational wisdom. As I shared last week, I think, or the week before. Week before, because Ray preached last week. An absolutely stunning message, if you've missed that, on the fear of the Lord. But the week before, I was sharing how Solomon, the guy who wrote most of Proverbs, he was given a spiritual gift of wisdom. It was a supernatural empowerment to be wise. And so what Solomon does in this book of Proverbs is he looks and he watches and he observes people. And he just gives little anecdotes. That's all it is. It's an observational book. But it's blessed with heavenly divine wisdom. And so you combine that divine wisdom with practical insight. I'm telling you, there's such power in this book. And today we want to look at the world of work. Because work occupies so much of our time. It occupies our future. It occupies our finances. It occupies a lot of the motivation and the energy that we have at life. And it's a bit like marriage. If you're married, you know, if work is going well, so much of your world is going well. If work is difficult, then it's hard, isn't it? You know, if you've got a difficult workplace or there's lots of challenges, then getting up in the morning is difficult because it's, that's right, I've got to face that person or that customer or that boss or this situation, and it demotivates, right? So the book of Proverbs is really key to understanding wisdom. So in the world of work in Proverbs, Solomon observes three kinds of people. Now, he didn't give them names, but I will. And I want to introduce you to three of them. The first one is Simon. His name is Simon the Sluggard. And Simon the Sluggard, this word occurs 12 times in the book of Proverbs, but it doesn't occur anywhere else in the Bible. So Solomon either invents this word or keeps it exclusively for the book of Proverbs. But this idea of the sluggard, after a slug, has its roots in the idea that it comes from delay. So Simon is an expert in delaying things, procrastination. So in delaying doing things, then he ends up like this. And I'm just checking that there are no Simons in the room. I was trying to be careful. All right, that's good. No offense if you are Simon. Now, the Bible talks about the sluggard. And in that sense, he observes the different types of people who might be slothful or sluggardly. For example, Proverbs 19:24, the sluggard buries his hand in the dish, but will not even bring it back to his mouth. You can imagine at a mealtime, particularly in those days where probably not necessarily using knives and forks, but they go to get some food from the middle of the table, and they just make it. Because life is so slow and it's so difficult to even move my arm over there, even though it's going to be good for me. The food is way over there and I might just get there if I really stretch and try hard, but I don't have the strength to bring it back to my mouth. It's just too hard. That's Simon. That's how Simon eats. Everything's difficult. Everything's delayed. Everything's awkward. Proverbs 24 says the sluggard does not plow after the autumn, so he begs during the harvest and has nothing. He can't be bothered plowing. The season where you need to get your seed in, the season where you want to sow so that come spring and summer, you've got a harvest coming. Everybody else is out there getting up early and planting and sowing and tractoring and plowing and whatever they do. Not tractoring, tilling is after. Help me. Linda, that's good. Thank you. Spot the farmer. But he's not. He's not. And so come springtime, his field is left bare because he hasn't invested in that time. And so he has to beg and has nothing. There's no social security back then. There's no support system. He just has to do without. Or go and sit on the road and beg. Not because he's not able to, but because he hasn't been bothered. 24:30, it says, I passed by the field of the sluggard and the vineyard of the man lacking sense, and behold, it was completely overgrown with thistles. Its surface was covered with nettles, and its stone wall was broken down. It's a picture of neglect, of a field or a house or a property that has thistles growing up where there should be a crop. Where the wall is not being repaired so things can get in and steal it or animals could escape. It's a place where there's kind of overgrown, nasty. And it's not just a picture of a field or a farm. It could be a picture of everything. It could be a picture of a family or a house or a business or parts of our world that when we neglect it, it's like thorns and thistles grow up and things can get in and out. The diligence that is required is not there. In 26:13, the sluggard says, there's a lion in the road. A lion is in the open square. At last, the sluggard's animated. But that's all he does. He just alerts other people to the problem. There's like a dinosaur out there. We don't have anything in Australia that's dangerous. A brown snake, maybe. You know, with a man-eating kangaroos or... Drop bears, yetis. So he sees something but hasn't the energy to do anything about it and hopes that somebody else will. If he just alerts somebody to it, then hopefully somebody will go and cause that to go away. But that's me. Ooh, I'm just going to bed. As the door turns on its hinges, 26:14. So does the sluggard on his bed. You know, It's the slow creaking door. Have you got one at your house? It's usually outside the kid's bedroom. That's the sluggard in bed. It's not a terribly flattering picture, is it? But it's there. It's in the Bible. I'm not making it up. These are the common elements of the sluggard. He battles with motivation. Simon doesn't think much of the future. He lives in the now. There's no deal with maintenance or looking after things that are his. And he hopes that others will take care of his problems. So it's all about other people. To be honest, there's a bit of Simon in all of us, right? All of us have a lazy streak. All of us find it difficult sometimes, particularly in winter. All of us have that motivation, particularly when things are difficult at work or at home or in study. But you know that there's so much more to life than what Simon experiences. And we've got to fight against that, that character, and really ask Jesus to help us. Because what I love about Jesus is this incredible motivation. Now, Jesus rested. I'm not talking about rest. It's completely different. Rest is intentional downtime, intentional, planned days, times, holidays. That's good. I'm not talking about that. I see rest in Jesus, but I don't see that sense of, it's too hard or can't be bothered or maybe someone else will do it. He was the guy who set his face like flint towards the rock and just kept going. You look at Paul in the New Testament. In fact, any of these guys in the Bible who made advances for the kingdom of God, they were not like this. And all of us, if we just enlist Jesus' help, we can overcome that, right? So let's move on from Simon the sluggard. He's number one of three work ethics we see in the scriptures. Number two is Diligent Dave. And many, many proverbs talk about Diligent Dave. The word diligent, it comes from the word to be decisive or to cut. So if you can picture a plow, that's a tilling thing. It goes through the soil and it makes a mark on the soil. Like that's the word. It distills, it cuts, it makes, it separates. So this word diligent means that when something diligent has happened, there's a mark, there's an impact, something's happened. And so whenever you find diligent people, you'll find evidence of their diligence. You'll find a mark. You know, you'll find something that's happened in that world. You walk into a room and things changed or there's activity around. That's the root word. So here there's a bunch of scriptures, and I've had to reduce them for time. But let's run through some scriptures that describe this guy, Diligent Dave. 10:4, he says, "Poor is he who works with a negligent hand, but the hand of the diligent makes rich." He says, if you're diligent, that investment, that time, it will bring you wealth. 12:11, "He who tills the land will have plenty of bread, but he who pursues worthless things lacks sense." You see, the diligence means that you're gonna till the land, you will have bread. It's the opposite of the sluggard who can't be bothered tilling. This is the guy who gets out and tills and sows seed. He will have plenty. He will have a harvest that comes in. Proverbs 12:14, "A man will be satisfied with good by the fruit of his words, and the deeds of a man's hands will return to him." Diligence isn't just in the hand, it's also in your words. It's what you say, it's what you speak, it's how you create things with your mouth. 12:24, "The hand of the diligent will rule, but the slack hand will be put to forced labor." Ruling people, leading people are diligent. They work, they make a difference, they make an impact. Proverbs 13:11, "Wealth obtained by fraud dwindles, but the one who gathers by labor increases it." You see, we could get wealth by robbing a bank or stealing stuff or creating, you know, false economy or something, but that actually will dwindle. God's wired our world up so that will not succeed. The only way to get ahead is through honest work, honest investment. 14:23, "In all labor there is profit, but mere talk leads only to poverty." This is this idea of not just, don't just talk about it, do it. I just don't want to hear about what you're doing. I want to see evidence for that. There is the profit. 21:5, "The plans of the diligent lead surely to advantage." See, it's about planning. "But everyone who is hasty surely comes to poverty." haste. Quick, let's do this or that. If that's not thought through, can lead to poverty. So diligence plans. Diligence just doesn't do, it does intentionally. And there's heaps more. What I love about Proverbs is that there's no order. It's not like a chapter of diligence, you know, or a chapter of sluggardness, or it's scattered throughout. So you just keep coming across the same thing. You find that? It's like so you just got to pull things out sometimes and stack them up against each other. So diligent Dave is the opposite of Simon the sluggard. He's a hard worker. He's fit. He's motivated. He's focused. He's ambitious. He has plans, and he knows where he's going in life. He's got purpose. He's got identity. The pursuit of worthless things doesn't make sense to him. Everything has a purpose and intention, and he understands that wealth is gained by hard work long term. Not just talking about it, but doing it. And here's the rub. You see, we might think that diligent Dave is the poster boy, you know, so he's often the verses are next to each other, you know, that the sluggard does this, but the diligent does this. They're often mapped up next to each other. And we might think that all I've got to do is the diligent bit, and I will be successful in life. I will get ahead. I'll be prosperous. It's all good. It's all down to my hard work ethic. And as long as I work hard at it, then I'll be successful. You might have already had some alarm bells going off in your head, going, actually, there's more to it than that. It's not as simple as that. Because here's the problem with diligent Dave. It can lead to pride, self-achievement, and arrogance. And it stems to, you know, probably the extreme right of our political spectrum, that I've made it, I've done it, this is how you work it. And if you can't be successful like me, then you just need to get a job, or you just need to do this or that. And it ends up being harsh and ungracious and unaccommodating of other people's needs. The extreme diligent Dave is a self-made man but has no room for other people. It has no sympathy or compassion for those who haven't yet made it, or for those who will never make it for whatever circumstances in their world. And so there are people, there are even Christians who sit out here. But I'm telling you, there's way, way more to it than that. That's why I love what I see in our church. And it leads to number three that you see again, is character number three. It's not in the middle between Simon the sluggard and diligent Dave. He's not in the middle. He's on a separate plane altogether. It's generous Joe. The generous Joe combines the success of diligent Dave, but then uses what he's got to be compassionate. Generosity comes from the root word to bless. You see this word a lot in scriptures, bless, blessing. And sometimes in church life, we've had this notion that God will bless me. All I got to do is maybe like the sluggard, just sit down and God will bless me. Yeah, he'll bless me. He hasn't yet, but he will. He takes his time, you know. And this, he hasn't done it yet, but, you know, there's a verse in the Bible about blessing, and I don't know where it is, but I know he'll bless me. You see, sometimes we akin God to like the lotto or something. It's like, well, my ships will come in one day, or, you know, one day it'll just all happen for me. But, you know, it doesn't quite work like that either. So generous Joe personifies this incredible middle ground. He's hardworking, but he blesses. And here's where the word bless comes from originally. First time it's used in the Bible is in relation to Abram in Genesis 12. And this is right where God is talking to Abram, who before Israel, he's setting up the whole nation of Israel. And he speaks to Abram. He says, hey, Abram, I will make you a great nation. I will bless you. I'll bless you. There's the word. I will bless you. It means be generous. I'll be generous to you. I will make your name great, and so you shall be a blessing. You see that? God says, I will bless you so that you will be a blessing. It's not enough to acquire and to be wealthy and to be rich without that sense of overflow to be a blessing to other people around us. That's the point of what God set up in Abram. It's the point of Jesus. Blessed to be a blessing. And here's the mystery. It doesn't make sense mathematically. Diligent Dave is very good with maths. He understands that if I do this deal, I'll get this much. If I sell that, I'll get this much profit. He understands his bottom line. He understands the deals. But you know what? Generous Joe doesn't get it because it's not possible to understand. There's some strange maths that God does with Generous Joe. Let's look at it. Proverbs 11, 24 says, there is one who scatters and yet increases all the more. It means there's one who gives things away and yet somehow his world increases. Someone who gives food away, but yet he has more than he had before he gave it away. Hang on. Any mathematicians in the room? Any people who like things to add up? It doesn't. This goes on. There's one who withholds what is justly due, and yet it results only in want. How does that work? One who keeps back, but yet somehow that all disappears somewhere. How does that work? And it goes on. He who waters will himself be watered. He who gives out and is generous and looks after people will himself somehow be watered and nourished. The maths does not add up. But doesn't that excite you? Like, doesn't that cause faith to rise up in you? Doesn't that say that I don't just have to be hardworking? There's actually way more to success in life. In fact, here is the path to success. It's not just in being a hard worker. It's actually in the generosity of your world. There's heaps of scriptures. I'll keep going. Proverbs 3:9 says, honor the Lord from your wealth and from the first of all your produce, so your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will overflow with new wine. Now, I look at that verse. What's the so there for? So means in order that. Like, we don't usually promote this kind of thing in church. Like, honor the Lord from your wealth and from the first of your produce so that your barns. It's saying give in order that you will get. You've got to balance the scriptures around. But there's a sense that to get ahead is to give away. Sometimes to other people, looking after people, sometimes up. It keeps going. Proverbs 10:22, it is the blessing of the Lord that makes rich. His blessing gives us wealth. It's not just hard work. It's the blessing of the Lord that comes. And guess what? He adds no sorrow to it. When his blessing comes, there's no sorrow, there's no regret, there's no sense of being, you know, down about wealth. Some of the most wealthy people I know, some of the saddest, because they kind of withhold, but there's no sorrow to it. Goes on, 14:31. He who oppresses the poor taunts his maker. God cares about the poor and the needy. And if you oppress or poke fun or make life difficult for poor people in our world, you taunt the maker. That's a strong passage, isn't it? And I think globally, what does that mean for us? You go, I haven't oppressed the poor. But, you know, this is why people in our economic systems or, you know, where our clothes are made or how the labor production line is. We could actually think about that. Faithful man will abound with blessings. Someone who's faithful and does good things, he will abound in blessings. But he who makes haste to be rich will not go unpunished. You see, Generous Joe has stumbled across a secret, and there are others, verses there. The blessing flows from diligence, not slothfulness. Hear this. I'm not saying it's wrong to be diligent, because it's actually good to be diligent and to earn so that you can give it away. If you have no income or nothing enterprising going on, it's very hard to have that overflow to give away. So the diligence will lead to abundance. produces an overflow to sow. I've seen it again and again in this church. I've seen so many people caring for the poor, looking after people. I love C3 Cares. I love what we do in Thailand. It's the most beautiful thing. But I'm telling you, it requires a personal response. Some of us need to make the shift from hard work to favor. We need to make the shift. It's not just about our own hard work. As I was praying for this morning, you know, I sensed the people in the room, you've worked hard and given. There's return coming. You got to believe that. As I started praying, and I just got this great sense of encouragement for folk that the things that you've given and sowed and work in, God sees it. God understands it. God knows what it's like. You see, so many times we give and we give and we give, and then sometimes I feel like I've just given too much. I'm not just talking money. I'm talking time. So many people give so much time in this church, giving to other people and generosity, friendship and smiles and energy. So many people doing so much. But like the Lord says this morning, watch for the increase. Watch for the increase. The shift is to favor. The shift is not just, it's not just about my hard work and what deals I can pull off. Oh no, there's a blessing on the giving. There's a blessing on the giving. It's a shift from hard work to favor. Why don't you close your eyes for a second? I want you to hear this from the Lord. The generous man will be prosperous. That's a promise. A faithful man will abound with blessings. That's a promise. If that's you this morning, I just want you to accept that word and receive encouragement this morning. The things that you've given, the time and the energy and the finances and the enterprise and all that's gone on this morning, I feel like Lord's saying, it's not finished. The Lord sees it. He will repay. He will raise up. He will restore. Holy Spirit. Holy Spirit, speak that word to people who need it. You're battling with finances right now, and you've given so much. Just watch and see what the Lord will do with that. You're battling time because you've given so much. Just watch and see what the Lord will do. He redeems things. You've given energy and years of your life to things. Watch and see what the Lord will do. The generous will prosper. The generous will be blessed so that they can be a blessing in turn. Not just in your finances, in your key relationships. Maybe you've invested and invested and invested in your family, your relationships, friends. Look to that increase. Not a natural increase, not one you can count and add up like Diligent Dave. No, a supernatural increase. One that doesn't make sense. One that has no geometry to it. It's just there and it's magnificent. In your business, your career, in your breakthrough, in your ministry and the things that God's put in your heart to do. And you've given so much and built so much, but your dreams are way bigger. Just watch. God will fulfill the dreams of your heart. It happens through sacrifice. You've got to expect the shift. Expect the shift. Look to see. It's like Elijah Mount Carmel. Just keep looking. Keep watching. Keep looking. Some of you might need to make the shift. Maybe some of you need to move this parts of us that are with Simon the Sluggard. All of us have a bit of him in us. Maybe some of us need to make the shift and move and get out of bed. But don't just work hard. Work with favor on your world. Work with generosity. Work to see breakthrough come. I see a church filled with diligent, systematic, long-term generosity. A church that transforms its city. A church that has a different economy about it. A church that blesses when it's hard. A church that gives. A church that's noticed because not because it's loud and noisy about what it does, because it just gets alongside people and does things.
Thanks for listening. We would love to connect with you. Our services are on Sundays at 217 Howick Street at 10 a.m. for a 10:30 service. Or visit us on the web at c3churchbathurst.org.
Come like a river, come like a flood. Let us be overwhelmed, baptized in your love.